You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Well, welcome again to another episode of the New Churches Podcast. We're actually hosting these on video at multiple sites. We're doing Facebook, got them on Facebook. You got them at the Wheaton College Billy Graham Center over at newchurches.com, at the Church Multiplication Institute at Wheaton College, all over the place. Normally, this is just an audio podcast. It's the greatest audio podcast ever in the history of church planting. I don't know if that's true, but it's helping a lot of church planters. We love church planters here. So I've got a couple of co-hosts with me today. And what we're going to do is go down a little bit different of a road. Is that I want to talk to them and share a little bit of their journeys. I'll share a little bit of my journey. And then we're going to ask, what would you do differently if you did it all over again? So let's go back. And first, we're going to start. I'll introduce them as they tell their story. Let's start with Mike. And Mike Crawford leads the Send Network efforts in Maryland, Delaware, working with and overseeing church planters. But Mike, you've planted. Tell us dates, location, and a little bit about the church plant.
2009, moved to Baltimore City with the family, started core group gathering in the afternoons on Saturday afternoons at the YMCA.
Nice.
And started, 15, 16 people. It grew to about 70 people. So then by January of 2010, we launched.
Right. So the core group was 70, launch team was 70.
Yeah, we launched in January of 2010, and we're in a school, and pretty much stayed about right there. Mm-hmm. Over the next year or two, grew to 100 and couldn't really push through that 100 barrier. It was right around there. Really difficult. And right around there is where a lot of my planting pains came.
Sure.
That are closely associated and tied to the things I do different.
Yeah.
Because, as a general rule for me at least, change comes when I feel pain.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty stubborn. Yeah. So it's got to cost me like a relationship or emotional or money. It's got to, before I wake up and say, okay, God, what are you doing? What do you need me to do? What am I not seeing right? Eventually push through some of those, end up getting an actual church building. A church had shut down, and we moved in. We were able to bring many of them on with us. Their church shut down. They joined us and grew. And then in the process of time, began to identify leaders and kept growing and growing and growing. And then we eventually planted a church. Mm-hmm. And that was in years seven. That was 7 years in, 8 years in?
Mm-hmm.
Seven, 8 years, 8 years in,
right,
I think.
Sure.
Prior to that, we had two failed attempts. Which we could talk about, two failed attempts. Yes.
I love talking about failures. People love talking about failures.
Yeah, because you learn a lot. We had two failed attempts, but this third one worked, and the good news is that church ended up going on to plant a church.
Oh, cool, grandchildren.
And so we feel like we have planting in our DNA. Mm-hmm. We have systems and structures to do that, and so it was a good journey.
Love that. Okay, so that gives a little background. That's Freedom Church in Baltimore, particular part or neighborhood of Baltimore?
Northeast
Baltimore. Okay. Yeah. So we're going to go to Clint Clifton. Clint planted Pillar Church. You're still at Pillar Church.
Yeah.
Are you still at Freedom Church?
Yes and no. I was supposed to go, but pandemic hit.
Okay, fair enough. So you're overseeing churches for the Send Network right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so you planted Pillar Church. You're still at Pillar Church.
Yeah.
So take us back. Give us the year, the location. Give us some of the details on the planting journey.
Yeah, 2004, I was on staff of a nearby church, and that church sent us out about 10 miles north to start the new church, and it grew really slow. I mean, I think at the end of year one from our launch, we had 30 or 35, mm-hmm. and we planted a church.
You were early on planting churches.
Yeah, we took our group of 35 and divided it in two, essentially, and planted 3 miles away. And then we did it again the next year and the next year. So we were really focused on multiplication and should have been focused on growth probably a little bit more in the beginning. But I was reacting to everybody else who was totally focused on growth and not focused on multiplication enough.
Not that we pendulum swing back and forth.
Not that I would ever do anything like that. But that was the story. And then 7 years in, our church really gotten some traction, both in church planting and it started to grow a little bit. And one of our other elders, it just became clear that God was preparing him for the primary shepherding role in the church. And so so I stepped into a role of multiplication in the church, and he took the lead on shepherding. So I preach once a month. He preaches three times a month.
You're still preaching,
interesting. Yeah, and it's been great. We've been doing that for 10 years, and it's a great partnership.
Are you still preaching at Freedom Church, though?
Every now and then.
Every now and then.
Probably three, four, five times a year.
Okay, so Les, you're in the regular preaching rotation. So all the churches I planted are somewhere else. So yeah. I don't, when we came to Chicago, we left a church plant that we planted in Nashville, Grace Church. They have a building now and all. But when we came here, Donna actually said, no church planting for a while. She said, we don't want to do another one right now.
Yeah.
So my church planting journey would be planted churches in most places I lived as an adult. Buffalo and Erie as full-time church plant. Well, I mean, not full-time. I was a contractor bivocationally in Buffalo, blowing insulation and rehabbing houses. And then Erie, full-time church planter. Then when I was at, I went to, I didn't plant a church when we were in Louisville, or there, Louisville 3 years. Planted a church in North Georgia when we were there at the North American Mission Board. Planted a church in Nashville. And kind of all different vibes, you know, some more successful than others, some struggled. One merged with another church. So probably a mix of stories. So I have some things to learn, but they'll come from different church plants. So let's talk about that. If you had to do it over, going back to Clint, if you had to do it over, or if you got to do it over, what would you say, these were two or three things I definitely should have done differently? Give us two or three, and then we'll ask Mike as well.
Well, I think I would have worked to have plural leadership in the church earlier.
Okay, the irony is that's going to be the opposite of mine, but go ahead.
Okay.
That sounds bad. I mean, I started with co-pastors. We're going to talk about that, but go ahead.
We had 3 years where I was the only decision maker in the church.
Oh, okay. A different
story.
So
all the weight of decision making was on me. And so if things went good, I got prideful. If things went bad, I got crushed. And I just didn't even realize how much I needed other people around me to shoulder some of the burden and joys of ministry. Once that happened, the church really started to accelerate when we got to that point. So that was obviously, I mean, the tension there is you can't make choices, you can't make unwise choices about people you're not confident about too early.
Right.
And that was what was holding me back. I was concerned about making bad choices, so I didn't make any choice. And so.
Yeah. Okay, so one was not having plural leadership into that conversation. I said two or three. So give me a couple other quick ones.
I wasn't a preacher when I started the church. I was
your degree's in music.
Undergrad and master's degree in music. And
so he should be doing the songs.
I had spent most of my time on a lot of time on stage in front of crowds, but not doing, not preaching. So I was in my first 10 sermons when I launched the church, you know, or something like that. So, I would have prepared myself better as a preacher. I think it took me 2 or 3 years to sort of find my voice as a preacher. And
so you planted before you got practice in preaching.
Oh yeah,
that's fascinating.
My congregation was my
yeah.
They endured some pretty awful. Exactly.
Well, he practiced.
Yeah, actually, one week I printed a retraction in the bulletin because I said so many wrong things the previous Sunday. I said some theologically wrong things. I said some scientifically wrong things.
Yeah.
I just said inaccurate stuff, and so I couldn't keep track of all. So I just literally printed the bulletin
just a section
and I said, guys, I messed up a lot of stuff on Sunday. So
just remember, Augustine at the end of his life printed a whole series of volumes called Retractions.
I didn't know
of
that.
All the things that he said. Yeah, these are wrong.
Fascinating.
And I was once preaching at Westminster Chapel in London.
Yeah.
And I was saying that it was, you know, on Christmas, God sent Jesus. You know, God sent Jesus. And I said, God made Jesus, which is pretty much a heresy. So someone take a clip of that and put it online. But I'm so thankful my early sermons weren't found. So developing your preaching voice. Yeah. So another area you do differently. Give me one more you would do differently.
I didn't bring in young leadership enough. Right now we have a robust internship, apprenticeship, stuff like that.
Right.
I would have brought young leaders in to shadow me in what we were doing a lot quicker.
Fascinating. Anyway, Mike, what about you? What are the two or three mistakes you made? You love, if you could do over, you do these differently.
Youth ministry. I had five kids.
Yep.
You know, they were 15 to 7. And it's my biggest regret in church planning.
That you didn't have one.
That I didn't have one, but I had one.
Right.
Like, my kids were inviting their friends. We were being very missional.
Right.
We were getting our neighbors. They were inviting people over from school, from high school, middle school. Sometimes I'd have my own basic youth ministry without calling it. Mm-hmm. Come over. We'll feed you pizza. Mm-hmm. We'll do scavenger hunts. We lived near this creek, and I'd hide, like, you know, Kit Kats and Starbucks cards and all this stuff. And then afterwards, we'd have these, like, fireside chats about what's going on in your life.
You basically had a student ministry.
And I basically had a student ministry, and I literally let it slip out of my hand, because at the time, I was driven by the reach the young adult narrative. And, you know, that's my own fault.
I was one of the people who perpetuated the reach the young adult narrative.
I tell planters all the time, we have kids, and I encourage them, if you have children, go hard in the paint, as we like to say, with youth ministry. Right. Go hard, like, reach people with kids, build your kids. It sounds so counterintuitive. Oh, I need to do all this stuff. It's like, no, you get the kids. If you get the kids, you get parents.
Yeah.
If you build something strong with kids, you get parents. So have something robust. Second thing is, I would have gotten a building.
Interesting.
Because
how long from Freedom Church planting till that your church died or closed, and you took over that church?
3 years, 10 months, and 2 days.
You remember it to the
to
hours.
The day, exactly.
You set up in Teardown. Yeah. Were you in the Y, or did you just start
I
in
was,
the Y?
We started in the Y, and then we moved to a school, set up Teardown. Yeah. We put $25,000 into the school to make it halfway presentable with all the challenges we had at school. And then we moved into this building. And I remember so many people would come into Freedom, and we'd have almost monthly, we'd have baptisms. Every Sunday, there'd be scripture read, singing, preaching, communion, fellowship, prayer time. And literally, people would say, "This was wonderful. Let us know when you get a church."
Right.
And I'd be like, "What part of this was not church?"
But there's a cultural thing.
But what they meant exactly was, you're like trying to convince me that you're a McDonald's and you're selling it out of your trunk, and I don't trust this.
Interesting. Okay, so it created a sense of, this is a real church.
It's a real church.
Now, you could push against that cultural narrative,
of
but
course.
At the same time, there's an opportunity
engaging that. Because everything else in that community, when you need something, you go to an institution that's stable. And here's the other thing. Churches that don't have permanent places tend to be transient. So you want me to come and invest in this?
Right.
Are you even going to be here?
Right.
Like, how invest? You talk about missions and Baltimore, and you're here, and you want to change the city and all that. You don't even, it's like somebody saying, we're here to stay. It's like, where do you live? Oh, right now we're in our car.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, is it in your car because you're poor?
Okay.
Or are you in your car because it doesn't feel like you've really committed.
Yeah, non-Christians sometimes are more traditional about church than Christians are.
Yes, and that's my point. Yeah. And that's the third one would be, get a musician, like a lead musician, worship
person.
In
this case, Clint's right here for you.
Yeah, he's right there.
He's ready to
go. So I should have stole him.
Exactly.
Because he couldn't preach anyway.
We'd have been a great team, Mike.
It's a great team.
We would have rocked it. We'd have been salt and pepper.
So, musical reference. We like love musical references now.
Yeah.
That's here. Okay.
I know that one.
So, So in the community, go back to number two, the community that you're in, tell me a little bit about the racial ethnic makeup of the community that you're reaching. And did that impact the perception of the building?
Yes.
Tell me.
Because Baltimore is a majority black city.
Right.
Interestingly enough, when we started the church, the co-pastor with me was a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very faithful, amazing guy. He's got an amazing, healthy, amazing church in Washington right now. And but we're still in a African-American culture.
Right.
So traditional church where you're in a school now, but you're going to go to a row home or a corner store or some type of commercial building or a church building.
Right.
And you need to be in a permanent space. Yeah. I mean, there's people who have small churches and they run two or three services. So it's a fixture, right? And the other part of this is, I love what you just said, because I think a lot of our missiological understanding of quote-unquote lost people is not accurate, because we're like, oh, they're lost. Well, some people are lost, but some people are lost within the matrix of cultural Christianity. In other words, churches and, Christians vote right and XYZ. Yeah, I know that. And we think, no, they don't even know that. They don't need a building. They just need Jesus. And they're going, well, if you're going to invite me to church, I don't expect to come to your house. Mm-hmm. You're going to invite me to church, I don't expect you to come to some place where you have to set up and tear down. If you're going to invite me to church and I've got kids, you don't have none for my kids?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even the YMCA will take my kids.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Traditional stuff is, you got traditional stuff. And then here's the last piece I would say. You show up, and it's not so much now, but it's still traditional. In the early days, I would show up, and, you know, the tribe I was in, you know, you dress, but you didn't look like a preacher.
Right.
So I had a lot of these people coming in, and they'd look at me, and they'd go, boy, we really love the way you preach. And then their eyes would go like this.
For those of you listening, he's looking up and down at my clothes.
Right. So it's kind of like, but you're not dressed like a preacher.
Right, right.
And I was on that cultural change.
Yeah, sure.
And you know what I did? I started dressing like a preacher.
Did you really?
Started wearing slacks, shirts, and I even went to a bow tie.
No.
And people can say what they want. He knows. He sent me my bow tie.
I am wrecked by the bow tie.
Listen. That's not listen, I'm telling making. You. I'm telling
yeah.
you. I'm not saying there's a correlation.
Yeah.
But I'm saying when Freedom Church got a building and I stopped dressing like a cool kid and I started dressing more traditional in that environment,
yeah.
I'm just telling you. I started seeing more people come in like that, and it just happened.
I think that's a missiological question is, you know, attire, facility, those are missiological questions. Okay, so we're a little running kind of short on time here. So let me give three from me on the journey. So first, I would say, I already kind of hinted at one, is that I tried to plant once with co-pastors. And I would say the co-pastor thing, I get that I'm very much in favor of plurality of leadership, and I want to be, again, everyone's ecclesiology is listed, maybe different, but I want to be an elder, one of the elders, accountable to the elders, and more and more. But we kind of came in and we were all sharing the preaching, and it didn't work. Now, there were more than multiple good people. There are more than one factor that was there. I would just be cautious. I hear a lot of planters go out and say, I want to plant in a team. We're going to share the preaching. A lot of this doesn't resonate as well in that space. Again, I know you might have different opinions, but that's one. Number two is I failed to communicate often issues of transition. First time the transition didn't go well. I had told everyone I was going to stay forever because that's what I was thinking. I didn't. People were unhappy. I would say communicating issues of transition. And that's also, we have that in an earlier, or is it a later episode when we talk about transitioning?
I think it's an earlier episode.
It's an earlier episode. So we're recording these in a bunch. So in that episode, we talk about some of the ways to transition. I would say first transition didn't go well. Yeah. Second transition did go well. Pastored there to over two decades, my successor. Third transition was the one with multiple, we had three co-pastors, didn't go well, ended up merging with another church and going on from there. I'd say fourth one went better, you know. So it was interesting because I thought I learned after the first one, but I had this, let's plant with co-pastors, and that transition didn't go so great. So that's the second thing would be a more greater clarity of transition. And I think the third thing is a familial issue. And if you listen to prior issue episode as well, you hear us talk about some family-related issues. I think I said when I came to Chicago, Donna said, no more church plants. Because she later told me that it was hard on our marriage every time we planted a church.
Yeah.
And I thought I had sort of addressed that. Because early on, Donna was the one who was doing everything. She was always the one stuck in childcare. I don't think being childcare is a stuck reality for everybody, but that would be language she would use. She was always the one. We didn't have anybody. Donna would do it. Didn't have anybody. Donna would do it. And I had to learn how to guard my family. Donna just has such a willing spirit. I had to learn how to guard my family well. Okay, so we've all talked about questions. My guess is, as a church planner, these are things that you're already walking through. Keep in mind that our instances, circumstances, and contexts may be different than yours. But one of the best resources I've ever read was from a guy named Todd Hunter. At the time, Todd Hunter was, we'll put this in the show notes.
Yeah.
Todd Hunter was the head of church planting for the Vineyard Association of Churches. He subsequently converted to Anglicanism, and now he's the Anglican bishop in charge of the diocese for the sake of others. Head of one denomination converts to, anyway, another story. It's Anglicans. They're always, you know, it's like a vacuum into Anglicanism for a lot of people. I came to Christ in the Anglican tradition, so I don't know. But he wrote Church Planting Autopsies, and all he did was do a study of church plants that had failed. Uh-huh. So I want to encourage you, When you go to a community, I want to encourage you to go and learn from some of the past failures that people had. Sometimes failures can be our greatest teacher. You're listening to the newchurches.com podcast. I want to encourage you to, as always, like and share. Thanks for listening to the New Churches podcast.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.